So soul repair is what we're looking at. And that is a person's ability to make peace with themselves, to rehumanize themselves, and to reconcile the brokenness. So why? Looks like we have statistics. 23 million U.S. military veterans, 18 million are combat veterans. I'm not sure when that statistic was released, or where, what that timeline was based on, but that includes World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, and then 17 years of ongoing conflict, 18. Some veterans live in paramilitary or veteran-only support systems, never transition back to civilian life. Many post-conflict situations internationally give amnesty to perpetrators of violence, but do little else. Moral injury is an unexamined need in many professions. I would say that moral injury can apply to a lot of professions. When you get into ethical core belief decision-making processes, I think of our police force, our first responders, and what they do and see, and the choices and decisions that they make. Unintended consequences of soul repair after war, and positive role of veterans in larger society. We look at what we see veterans doing. Met a guy with one leg who was up skiing with other veterans who were more wounded and more physically or emotionally traumatized than he was. Like, you yourself got blown up, and you're caring for a group of, leading a group of people on ski trips up in Breckenridge, of soldiers who are struggling. That's amazing. And you see that growth where he took what was post-traumatic stress and turned it into growth because he was able to work on soul repair. And then I think the society at large needs to be invited to take the responsibility for some of our society's role in the whole thing. Maybe rethink what we consider just war and why we go to war, and whether or not that is just. So our protocols, and this is according to Litz, who is the author of the book on soul repair, I guess you'll say. Dialogue with benevolent moral authority. The goal is to have our patients verbalize what they saw and how it affected them, telling their story, what they think should happen to them or others, or over the life, over the rest of the course of their life. Because I don't think people want to suffer with this. They want the forgiveness that they need to let it go so that reparations and reestablishment can be possible. So we're looking at that shame and that need for forgiveness and that need for understanding, that need for it's okay. So that making amends, and that, I think that goes to that idea of making amends is that guy who's done something, who's now running a charitable organization helping others. You see a lot of veterans in community doing that. When then they're looking at fostering the reconnection, the intimacy, the vulnerability, and putting experiences into larger context. And it's the idea, at 50 years old, I said, like 1 year of my life in a combat zone. Why does that have so much a effect? And it's because I went there one way and I came back a different person. And you think, wow, only 1 year. And my dad used to always say, hey, don't let 1 year of your life define the rest of it. And yet, it does. And you can't really help it. But you put it in a larger perspective. And I think that has helped a lot with my ability to adjust. And I think, in some ways, others who have taken it. It's kind of, talking about post-traumatic stress disorder, it's such a low percentage of the population, and yet we see it so prevalent and so common. And I think moral injury is probably in that same category of, there's a lot of guys I know who follow the rules of engagement, young kid, following rules of engagement, some taxi cab tried to run the roadblock, He fires a warning shot with a 50 cal. It skips off the road, goes through the engine block, between the driver and the passenger, and into the lady who was sitting in the back seat. And I was talking to that kid. I'm like, he's like, I did everything right. This is just a freak. And I'm like, okay, so he's context. He has the context for that. He has the ability to say. And so there wasn't that sense of moral injury. Whereas in somebody else, they could go, I'm a horrible person because the rules of engagement weren't enough. That sense of betrayal, that sense of shame that comes with that. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. The top line reads, war is the foyer to hell. Coming home is hell. Person who left for war has changed, will never be the same, and will never forget what happened. And losses may need to be grieved into returning home. Loss of friendships, the unit's discipline, loss of role, identity, loss of family, the divorce, loss of faith. There's a chaplain who wrote a book about that, how he lost his faith while being deployed. Loss of reason, loss of desire to live. That's a lot of loss. But as we look at soul repair, individual and social dimensions of long-term recovery. So writing personal narratives, internalizing inner struggles, telling your story. Writing that personal narrative of what happened. And that's one of my big things is I don't do a lot of journaling. I know that people who do. There have been times when I did do a lot of journaling. I found it pretty therapeutic. And so I'm an encourager of writing your narrative, writing your story. Integrating the memories of your story into the larger picture, not letting that one deployment define the rest of your life. How do you integrate that into going forward? Reconnection, the veteran support systems, the VFW back in its day, it was huge for veterans to have a place to feel supported where they didn't have to say what had happened. People kind of understood the situation. If you're having a bad day, they kind of understood why. And then long-term support and accountability within the community. So our spiritual recovery from new pathways, from lamentation to reconstructing core values and self-worth and the moral meaning systems. So how do we get back from there to here? How do we get home to there safely? And I think there is a period of lamentation and that rituals and support for that grief that we experience. And our liturgies for lamentation hold complex feelings and open doors to healings. Is it okay to be angry at God? Struggle with God and with self. Remembrance of divine. What does that divine love look like now that you feel stained more so than you did before? There's a small group exercise, but we'll skip that since we're kind of just talking anyway. Anybody have any rituals that you do? Just out of curiosity? Or I think we all do, and especially in our religious tradition. It's very ritual. Each part of our liturgy serves a point. You know, and that's something where what I've seen, what I had hoped to do, if we'd had veterans or folks here, there's a liturgy that one of our chaplains created that is hand washings. And what can you do for soldiers before they return home or when they return home, when they feel like, you know, the song, give us clean hands.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's do a ritual that involves hand washing. I did a ritual when we left Iraq, which was for my unit, and all the soldiers came together. I gave them a slip of paper and I said, write down what you're leaving here. Before we get on the plane to go home, let's write down what you're leaving here, and then we're going to burn it so it stays here. And that was helpful, I think, to some, not everyone. So that was some of those various things. I'm sure there are other rituals that we can do that that come into play, but we see that those struggles.
With the nature of it being coming back at different times, perhaps that burning should happen. Be available at another time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as the flashbacks come. Mm-hmm.
And the chaplain who does the ritual with hand washing, and he does it with the veterans group, and he said it's remarkable how previous generations, you know, guys from 30, 50 years ago will appreciate and express the appreciation for feeling like there was a ritual that cleaned them from what they did, that they carry all of this baggage with them, and then finally I feel like ritual is powerful. And they serve a powerful purpose. Rehumanization of enemy and self. How does one move from being a killer to a healer? During a combat situation, and then afterwards, how do you transition? This is a Marine female who's a powerful picture right there. And she's trying to kill. And she's in a combat zone. Healing. What we see our veterans doing is making amends. And we've kind of talked about this, the disaster relief work, the refugee work, the peace missions that veterans do, veterans returning to Vietnam, and actually meeting and talking with the enemy that they fought 50 years ago, and the healing that's taking place on both sides in those situations. The neighborhood service projects, I can think of several. I think Blueprint Ministry here in San Antonio is the veteran guy who's working with Habitat in the community. That forgiveness and vocation, I have a new... he'll be a priest soon up in the Dallas area. He's pending ordination. He was a Green Beret captain, operator in Afghanistan, and you know, Bronze Stars and Purple Hearts and all of that stuff. And he's switched his vocation from being a Green Beret to a priest who's working in with veterans who are homeless in Denton, Texas. And that's pretty exciting ministry to see. And then absolution, letting go, looking to the future. So in spite of letting the community know that, and that's where I think as our community is, hey, we know what you've done. And we accept you. We believe in you. We've forgiven you. Thank you for doing that on our behalf, is what I think combat veterans need to hear, is that we can understand, we want to understand, we love you, we forgive you, thank you, forgive yourself.
Question on that.
Yes.
Why would we say we forgive you for doing your job? I would thank you for doing your job.
I think
I would bless and praise you for doing your job, for coming home alive and bringing your men home. That's the number one goal. I don't want American troops coming home in body bags. That means that, you know, like that where you said there are two kids out there. They use women and children as shields. That's what you just got to realize. They're all the enemy.
Maybe the term shouldn't be that that you're, we forgive you, but that you are forgiven.
Thank you.
Because I think for the guilt that is being borne by these young men and women, the point at which they need to feel forgiveness. And I think sometimes it's like with the absolution. I know that Scott doesn't need to say the absolution to know I'm forgiven. It's nice to hear it. Mm-hmm. And I think the more you can say it, that you are, quit carrying the guilt, you're forgiven. Don't let that beat you. Because as long as you're carrying the guilt, it's beating you. And the guilt isn't necessarily justified because they did do their job. We did what they asked them to do. But yet, that's a tough job.
It is a tough job. Sometimes you have to do what you don't want to do in order for your troops to come home.
Right.
And Americans, I want American troops to come home. Otherwise, they shouldn't be over there if they're not going to be given every opportunity to bring themselves back here.
And what's crazy is I saw a first sergeant who's over the company of soldiers. He's the highest enlisted guy. We're getting ready to go into Kuwait, and the first sergeant says, "It's okay, everybody's coming home. That's our goal." And the sergeant major overheard that and fired the guy because he says, "That's not your mission. Your mission isn't to bring everybody home. Your mission is to do your job. And if you're worried about bringing everybody home, you're probably going to get more people killed." And that was, there's some truth in that, as harsh as that sounds. So kind of weird, but we're dealing with tough stuff. And that like I said, where'd it go? Back to that forgiveness piece, that absolution. Like I said, I know I'm forgiven. It's nice to hear. So transformation and renewal, importance of religion and other communities. The rhythms of the liturgical year bring renewal. Amen. New neural pathways are formed. Scott was talking to me about this. You have information that you would like to share?
Just the book. It's called Switch on Brain.
Mm-hmm. By Dr. Kerr.
By a neurosurgeon, talking about how prayer and forgiveness, all that kind of stuff, rewire your brain physically.
And it's this transformation from constant repetition.
Yeah.
And renewal.
What's the name of that book?
Switch on Brain. It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
In religious communities, you see a sacramental structure of life. The dramatic reenactment of sacred stories of redemption here and now. Power that imagination. That allows people to develop those thoughts, processes of I can be redeemed. Watching, think of movies, and you look to the hero of that movie, and if it's a story of redemption and how they have survived and overcome, a powerful movie that Unbroken is, or a book. The movie was a little bit disappointing because they didn't go into the fact that where his healing came was at the 1948 L.A. Billy Graham Crusade. Mm-hmm. And that's where the Zamperini found healing, was in faith. So as communities, we're looking at engaging and deep listening, being willing to listen to this truth and the openness, offering these rituals and programs to process the moral injury. Providing long-term recovery support from friendships, conduct reflections on moral responsibilities of the entire society. Let the society around us take ownership. And then examine American exceptionalism and satisfaction. I didn't write that line, I want you to know up front. But I will say that if we can question and be angry at God, then we should be able to question our agenda as American in regards to foreign policy.
Absolutely.
So that would be the one thing that I would say about that. So that actually concludes this presentation.
questions.
You have questions? Yes.
As a congregation, I mean, the ritual aspects we do with the liturgical, or in our liturgical life.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of programs to serve the local community, because, I mean, this is, San Antonio is a training center.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you got a third of the population moving in and out all the time. What do you recommend we do as a congregation to really serve people with moral injury? Like, I mean, is things like this, obviously, I mean, are they helpful? Or is there more that we can do to serve people in our community?
I think this is a good start. I think as a veteran seeing a church want to reach out, it's just how do you get found that you are reaching out.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what the right way to do that is. So,
like I said, I work with a fellow who also recently out of the military who did suffer some PTSD. He tells me that there are a lot of resources that a lot of veterans either don't know about or don't take advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there are groups that he can go to, and they will come and pick him up to get there. And you know, any 24 hours a day, if he needs to call somebody, there's somebody to call. You know, which brings me to are there any studies that show why some people, you know, what in their background made them better able to either repress or handle those situations than other folks?
Not that I've really seen. And I've been curious about that. What makes one person handle something differently than the next person? Because my dad's generation, the number of his peers that we knew and we watched when I was 4 or 5 years old, the POWs returning home, and the number of those guys, and how you had Congressman Sam Johnson and John McCain and Leo Thorgness and some of these guys that went on to do greatly successful, but the suicide rate among the POWs is what they don't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that couldn't come back.
Yeah.
And like, what makes the difference between Leo Thorgness and you know, some other guy, Admiral Stockdale?
Yeah. Would it be higher among those who have a stronger moral system to begin with?
I think so.
The Christian going in with a strong sense of morality might have a harder time facing the same thing than somebody who, you know, might be more scattered in their moral convictions. But that also be, the Christians would also be more receptive to forgiveness, redemption.
Right. I think the kids that were really well grounded, that I did just experientially, that were really well grounded in their faith, that you know, they had the system to contextualize everything. The guys that dealt with more of Christianity, almost like a superstitious kind of thing, they wore their cross or their rosary or whatever, and this was going to, they had a harder time because they knew, they had enough of a knowledge base, but they didn't have, I know the ones that would, hey, we're killing people, how do we do this, chaplain?
Yeah.
The Bible says we're not supposed to kill, yet here we are. And how do you, as a chaplain, justify this? And those conversations, but usually, yeah, you're right, the devout guy never really came to me with those kinds of crises.
Oh.
But there's usually a little bit more maturity as I think that through. Some of those guys were, you know, late 20s, early 30s versus 19, 20, 21.
As a society, we're treating PTSD, but we're not treating the moral injury.
Not yet. No.
And so, you know, you've got this group here that are probably suffering that, you know, are sort of hidden and are hiding.
Right. I think in the military context, and the culture of the military, it has changed dramatically since I came in. You have a whole different thing about it. People are much more open about going to see behavioral health. People are much more open about talking about the fact that they have PTSD. People, it is a huge change in shift in culture. In my community, your biggest fear is, I'll lose my clearance if I go talk to behavioral health. And they come to the chaplain who's going, everything I've heard is you're probably going to lose your clearance if you don't go talk to behavioral health. you've got issues, and those issues are going to manifest themselves somewhere. So if you want to save your, and so that has been a big shift in probably the last 5 to 6 years. They no longer ask if you've been seeing a counselor for deployment-related mental health as part of your secure clearance. So that's been culture.
I think a lot of the ability to recover for people that I know has been, or to handle this recovery is not, but to handle it has been awareness of self and the realization that you have an issue.
Yeah.
That you need to find a way to take care of it. And a lot of people just, they either don't admit that they have a problem or they need help, or they're just not aware of, that you are in control of your body and your mind and what you can do.
Any other thoughts or comments?
I really appreciate the way you presented this because, I look at and how we minister and how we pray for people. It's like a surgeon going in to do surgery and realizing like if it's more PTSD fear based than as a prayer surgeon. You're gonna go in praying one way and trying to discern what the Spirit's saying, but if it's moral injury, it's more shame-based, mm-hmm. then, you can target your prayers like a surgeon with a scalpel. Just
right.
So I think that's really, really helpful because a lot of people operate out of those that are not in military,
right.
Shame or fear. And, of course, there's some overlap, but I think they're two separate things, too. So. Yeah.
I think in the third one that's out there, and we didn't mention it, but the three wounds you cannot see is PTSD, moral injury, and the mild traumatic brain stuff. And in the NFL, and you're looking at his retired NFL guys that don't know what's wrong with me, Junior Seau, yep. who killed himself and said, please, struck me, and they're finding this CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. I can't remember what that means, but just the toll that these concussions and soldiers come back with, blast overpressure. It was incredible to experience, and I can understand now if you've experienced that multiple times, it's probably doing something for your noggin, And I have a Craig kid who's a lieutenant now. He's a lieutenant colonel, which is weird. He went through the Striker vehicle. He was a commander in one of those vehicles, and every Friday for 3 weeks, he lost it. He basically had his vehicle blown up. And he comes to me, and I'm like, everything you're going through right now, whatever it is probably normal because your brain has been traumatized. And yet he's gone on to show no long-term effects. But it's kind of crazy what we as humans can process and handle, and I think at some point there comes a time where you have to stop and deal with. Yeah. Like I tell people, I know you can't grieve right now, but at some point you're going to have to.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can't deal with that issue right now, but down the road you will.
So, I have a question.
Yes.
With like 18 years ago from the war, so this guy broke out. I had a lieutenant, girl, female, who ended up having a relationship that she shouldn't have had. Mm-hmm. Got physical the way she shouldn't have. And came and talked to me and just lived it. Spent some time. But later, she was taking the guy and suing him. Perhaps I'm suing him. Taking the guy and she had reported that he had raped her. Mm-hmm. And basically, which I knew wasn't the case on the priest. So I just went and confronted her and we had a conversation. And she had totally turned it off. And just as she couldn't admit to herself what she had done, she had changed it and totally forgotten how she had come back and wouldn't believe it at first. But I just had too many details of what took place. Mm-hmm. And then she let it all drop. I hadn't thought about it. But is that a moral injury that took place? Would that be in that category, or is that something totally different?
I'm not sure. I think the potential of that betrayal of herself is there is something morally injurious that's happened. Betrayal of her core values to her marriage.
Right.
And then this.
A different person at home.
Then it's this extrapolation out on carrying out legal action against somebody is how that's manifested her own self-injury. I don't know. That's an interesting weird thought process. So my last slide there is from Captain Mac Camilo. USMC, a poem called The Warrior's Dance. I'll let you read it now. And we can never judge somebody else's pain, but we can engage it and help them through it.
See, that fear is capitalized. Mm-hmm.
But that concludes.
Well, thank you, Canon. The work has come around.